Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1912 with a release date of April 4th, 2014. To follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Ham radio responds after an earthquake hits northern Chile. The ARRL tells the FCC that it's time to step up amateur rules enforcement. The House of Representatives issues a white paper on certain aspects of the Communications Act. WRTC 2014 receives an assist in the form of a Colvin grant. The FCC tells Congress that it needs a computer system upgrade, and Amateur Radio Newsline opens its Young Ham of the Year Award program for 2014. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1912, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is this week's report.
Amateur Radio has responded after a major 8.2 magnitude earthquake that struck off the coast of northern Chile on Tuesday, April 1st. We have more on this report.
According to news reports, the quake caused at least 5 deaths and triggered a tsunami that pounded Chile's shore with 2-meter-tall waves. Officials said that most of the dead were people who were crushed by collapsing walls. The Chilean government evacuated that nation's northern coast, and President Michelle Bachelet declared the area a disaster zone. The Radio Club de Chile has been activated due to earthquake. It is working in collaboration with Chile's National Emergency Office of the Ministry of Interior and Public Security. According to a posting on Facebook, Chilean hams have established several emergency assistance as well as health and welfare nets. As we go to air, these nets are operating on 7.055, 14.255, and 21.315 megahertz, depending on the propagation and time of day. The net controls are asking other radio amateurs to please keep these frequencies clear until further notice. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
More on this story as information becomes available. The ARRL has told the FCC that renewed and more visible enforcement is needed to curtail violations of the Amateur Radio Service Part 97. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom with the details.
In comments filed in response to the FCC's February 14th report and order on process reform in GN Docket 14-25, the ARRL has called for a more visible, responsive amateur radio enforcement program. According to the League, the visibility of the Commission's enforcement program for the amateur radio service is wholly inadequate, resulting in widespread, albeit inaccurate, public perception that there is no active enforcement in our service. The ARRL said that deterrence based on visibility is a critical component of a successful compliance campaign. The ARRL asserted that the most successful and visible period of amateur radio enforcement in recent years was between 1997 and 2008. Compliance during that period, the League said, was the result of the visibility in the amateur radio community of a single member of the Commission's Enforcement Bureau staff at amateur radio events and of keeping the amateur radio media fully informed on what was being done to resolve a particular enforcement issue. The League went on to note that FCC-imposed constraints in more recent years has had a devastating effect on the entire philosophy of the program and its success. Among other factors, the ARRL pointed to the extensive approvals required before release of enforcement correspondence. Enforcement actions that are taken, the League continued, are not released to the amateur radio media. This deprives radio amateurs of the knowledge that the Commission is indeed investigating and responding to a given enforcement problem. The result is the perception that nothing is being done in a given case, and frustration builds rapidly among the radio amateurs who have to endure the rules violator on an ongoing basis. The ARRL stressed that the limitations imposed on the visibility of enforcement actions in recent years have significantly reduced the effectiveness of the program and directly resulted in a notable and unacceptable increase in rules violations, most especially malicious interference. The ARL says it believes the Enforcement Bureau personnel responsible for amateur radio enforcement should be empowered with greater autonomy in addressing problems as they arise. The league also said it was concerned that FCC policies for adjudicating certain complaints of interference to radio amateurs, especially those involving electric utilities, provide no incentive for the utilities to resolve them. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. I'm in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
In its closing comments, the ARRL said that it was not being critical of any individual FCC staffers or managers. Rather, the league's remarks are directed at the commission's policies and processes and address issues that result in large part from the unenviable necessity of allocating scarce and in some cases inadequate human resources available to the regulatory agency. There's lots more to this story, and you can find it on the web at tinyurl.com/ARRL-on-enforcement. Should the FCC be able to classify the funds it can get for a license as a public interest benefit? That's one of the questions raised in the latest white paper from the House Energy and Commerce Committee released on Tuesday, April 1st. The white paper points out that in order to issue spectrum licenses, the Communications Act requires the FCC to make an affirmative finding that granting the license serves the public interest, convenience, and necessity. Moreover, the Communications Act prohibits the FCC from basing its finding on the expectation of auction revenues. As such, one of the key questions is whether or not the Communications Act should be changed to permit the FCC to use expected auction revenue as the basis for a public interest finding. This is the second in a series of communications white papers that are part of an effort by the House Energy and Commerce Committee to gather input on an overall revamp of the communications laws. The committee says that it wants a response by April 25th as part of planning for a year-long look at the communications policy. This with an eye toward tackling a Communications Act rewrite next year. Our home star, the Sun, unleashed a major solar flare on Saturday, March 29th, causing a radio blackout for several minutes on Earth in the midst of the CQ Worldwide Single Sideband Contest. One operator in the Los Angeles area was heard to comment that it was almost as if 20 meters folded up and went away on vacation. The brief X1 class flare erupted from the now decaying sunspot AR-2017 at 1748 GMT, according to a report from the Space Weather Prediction Center. The center noted that even though the sunspot is dissipating, that it still holds the potential to produce more solar flares before it's gone. The radio blackout here on Earth lasted less than an hour before propagation began to normalize. Further details on the upcoming Global Amateur Radio Emergency Communications, or GARIC, conference in August has been announced. Amateur Radio Newsline Stephen Kinford, N8WB, reports.
GARIC 14 will be held in Huntsville, Alabama on August 14th and 15th, which precedes the Huntsville Hamfest by 2 days. The focus for the 2014 gathering will be the application of advanced technologies available in emergency communications. According to Jim Linton, VK3PC, the actual agenda to be finalized shortly will include reports by IARU regions. Also, information will be presented by those involved in recent emergency communications work and the technology that can be used to assist responders in crisis situations. This is the second time Huntsville has hosted a global amateur radio emergency communication conference. The last instance was back in 2007. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB reporting.
More information can be found on the GARIC 14 website at w4ozk.com/garec14.htm. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including WR6ABD on Mount Loma Prieta and serving San Jose, California. A greetings from the President of the Republic of Lithuania has been sent from the amateur radio satellite Lithuanica Sat 1. Her words, "Greetings to all Lithuanians around the world," were recorded on a memory chip in the satellite, and the message was successfully transmitted back from space on March 22, 2014 at 4:17 UTC. Lithuanica Sat 1 was launched to the International Space Station on January 9th and was deployed with other amateur radio satellites on February 28th. The Lithuanian president is believed to be the first of any nation to have a greetings message sent back from space since President Eisenhower did so back in 1958. WRTC 2014 incorporated the host of the 2014 World Radio Sport Team Championship competition as received a significant financial contribution in the form of a Colvin Award grant. The Colvin Award is managed by ARRL and funded by an endowment established by the late Lloyd D. Colvin, W6KG. The award is conferred in the form of grants in support of amateur radio projects that promote international goodwill in the field of DX. Doug Grant, K1DG, is the chairman of WRTC 2014. He says that the organization is honored to receive this prestigious award. Grant added that more than just a radio competition, the World Radio Sport Team Championship is a place where competitors from around the world can create or renew lasting friendships. The FCC is again considering whether to require that broadcast of emergency announcements be provided in multiple languages, primarily Spanish. This in addition to the current English-only alerting system. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP, gives us the background.
On Thursday, March 25th, the Federal Communications Commission said it is reconsidering a rule that would provide Spanish broadcasts of emergency alerts and other important announcements. Such a rule was originally recommended in the wake of Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Back then, groups including the Minority Media and Telecommunications Council petitioned the FCC to require broadcasters to notify Spanish listeners in the event of an emergency. In deciding to reopen the procedure for additional public comment, the regulatory agency said that such a rule would require certain stations to air all presidential messages in both English and Spanish. To a lesser extent, emergency broadcasts in certain areas may also be aired in other languages, such as French or Mandarin. The Minority Media and Telecommunications Council filed its position on September 22, 2005, in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Spanish is the primary language for more than 38 million people living in America, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. But many Spanish speakers do not understand English, so the FCC wants to ensure that they can be reached by emergency broadcasts. The petition calls for state and local governments to designate a local primary Spanish channel for emergencies. It also called for state governments to establish a local primary multilingual station in local areas where a substantial portion of the population has its primary fluency in a language other than English or Spanish. At least one broadcaster in every market would be required to monitor and rebroadcast emergency information aired by the local primary Spanish stations. For Amateur Radio Newsline, Norm Seeley, KI7UP, here in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Whether or not the FCC will proceed with this info into a formal rulemaking procedure is not known at this time. Amateur radio volunteers were called out in Snohomish County, Washington, to assist in operating the Emergency Operations Center and to support communication with American Red Cross shelters set up in the wake of the tragic landslide on March 22nd near the town of Oso. The slide swept a massive avalanche of trees, wet soil, rocks, and debris across the rural Northwest Washington community along State Route 530. The county's Auxiliary Communications Service radio officer, Scott Honecker, N7SS, told the ARRL that his organization has been active but at a fairly low level. Onaker said the slide damaged some of the communication infrastructure, with fire and law enforcement personnel using cell phones to keep in touch while service and rescue units, along with air operations, utilized VHF radio. Honecker said that the ham radio auxiliary communications service volunteers were coordinating their activities on the Granite Falls 146.92 MHz repeater and using cell phones. Also, that the Emergency Services Coordinating Agency was active staffing the Red Cross shelters, using their 442.200 UHF repeater near Arlington for purposes of organization and management. As this report is prepared, at least 21 are confirmed dead, with another 30 still missing. The Federal Communications Commission says that its information technology equipment is so deficient that its leader has gone to Congress pleading for an upgrade. At recent hearings before the House and Senate Appropriations Subcommittee that handle his agency's budget, FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler said that the FCC needs $13.5 million to upgrade what he termed its antiquated technology. According to Wheeler, the agency has more than 200 different computer systems, and 40% of its technology is at least 10 years old. He says that money not spent on upgrades next year will be spent within 2 years on what he terms expensive maintenance. But more importantly, Wheeler told the committee that vulnerability to cyber attacks is a top concern. He noted that many of the FCC's computers still use Windows XP, which is the 13-year-old operating system that Microsoft is ending support for on April 8th. Improving the agency's efficiency and accountability is a high priority for Congress and the new chairman. Without new information technology in place, it is difficult to achieve these goals. Some names in the news. First up is Clear Channel Media and Entertainment, which has announced its intention to mentor a new program of radio station engineers. Jeff Littlejohn is Clear Channel Executive Vice President of Engineering and Systems Integration. He says the company is making a strategic investment in the future of broadcast engineering. Littlejohn says that the company hopes to attract and expose new talent to the ever-changing world of radio, while also fostering the growth and development of their existing employees. Clear Channel says the new mentoring program was created in response to a decline in the number of engineers choosing to go into radio broadcasting, coupled with a spike in those retiring or close to leaving the industry. This new program is in addition to an electrical engineering co-op program the company created 3 years ago. Katie Allen, WY7KRA, has been appointed Sales and Marketing Manager for CQ Communications Incorporated, effective immediately. An active DXer and contester who recently earned her extra class license, Katie Allen entered the world of amateur radio as ARRL's membership manager in the early 2000s, earned her first ham license under the guidance of other league staff members. She then sparked an effort to revitalize the ARRL staff radio club and station, W1HQ, both of which had fallen into inactivity. She also helped move ham radio into the world of multimedia by producing and posting various operating videos on YouTube. In her new job, she will be responsible for advertising sales for CQ Amateur Radio Magazine, including the CQ Plus digital supplement, as well as marketing efforts for all CQ Communications products. If you're a ham who will be attending the National Association of Broadcasters gathering in Las Vegas, you're invited to attend the free annual ham radio reception on Wednesday evening, April 9th. This year's gathering will be co-hosted by Heil Sound, Broadcast Supply Worldwide, and DX Engineering. The location will be Ballroom B in the original Las Vegas Hilton Hotel at 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Savings Time. Bob Heil, K9EID, says that he hopes to see many of you there. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio News Line with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. Some sad news to report, with this word that AMSAT Vice President of Engineering Anthony J. Monteiro, AA2TX, died from cancer on Wednesday morning, March 26th, at age 55. Monteiro was licensed in 1973 as a novice and subsequently went on to achieve his extra-class radio amateur license. His interest in amateur radio and electronics led him to earn a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering from Drexel University and a Master's in Computer Science from Stanford University. Monteiro joined AMSAT in 1994. Among his many technical contributions to the amateur satellite community was the Instant Tune Automatic Radio Tuning Software, a simple desense filter for echo, and several other extremely low-cost projects. Monteiro also played a significant role in space-based hardware development. As AMSAT's Vice President of Engineering, he served as the software designer for the software-defined transponder on Arisat-1 that was deployed from the International Space Station in August 2011. He also led the Fox One engineering team from its inception in 2009 and pioneered AMSAT's efforts to apply for acceptance of Fox One in the NASA Education launch of NanoSats in 2011 and Fox One B in 2012. Monteiro established relationships with several universities to secure scientific payloads for Fox One and Fox One B, including student experiments. Anthony Monteiro, AA2TX, is survived by his wife, Mary Lou, and daughter, Veronica, who is a college freshman. In lieu of flowers, the family asked that donations be made to Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation, 850 Sligo Avenue, Suite 600, Silver Spring, Maryland, 20910. The shortwave broadcast bands are a bit thinner after the Voice of Russia bid farewell to the airwaves at midnight on April 1st, local Moscow time. Earlier reports published in 2013 claimed that Voice of Russia, formerly known as Radio Moscow, was to cease its shortwave service as of January 1st of this year due to budget cuts mandated by Russian President Vladimir Putin. Last December 9th, Putin signed a decree stating that the Voice of Russia, as an independent agency, officially ceased to exist and was to be merged with several other news agencies as part of the state-run Russia Today International News Service. A Moto TRBO digital voice repeater has taken the place of a D-Star system that was underutilized in Scotland. On March 4th, the GB7DD D-Star repeater in Dundee was shut down due to lack of use. It was replaced by a Motorola Moto TRBO DMR digital voice repeater provided by Martin Higgins, MM0DUN. According to the Radio Society of Great Britain, the GB7DD is the first DMR repeater on the air in Scotland and is a UHF system on 439.6625 MHz with a 9 MHz split. The European CW Association has introduced a new on-the-air Morse-based game called Snakes and Ladders. The game is designed to promote increased activity on all amateur bands by encouraging friendly contacts. As such, it is not a contest, but rather a way of making the hobby more fun. Full rules are available in English from the Snakes and Ladders webpage at www.eucw.org. Scientists have created the largest high-resolution mosaic of the moon's north polar region amassed to date. According to NASA, the photo is comprised of 10,581 pictures that have been radioed back to Earth as part of the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter project. NASA says that a complete printout at 300 dpi, 300 dots per inch, would require a square sheet of paper wider than a professional U.S. football field and almost as long. It also notes that if the complete mosaic were processed as a single file, it would require approximately 3.3 terabytes of storage space. Instead, the compilation was divided into millions of small compressed files, making it manageable for users to look at and navigate using a web browser. The interactive display also allows viewers to zoom in and pan around an area. The Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter entered the moon's orbit in June of 2009. The Vienna International Amateur Radio Club has announced that it will operate stations under the newly released call signs of C7A and 4Y1A as a host organization. The club already operates a United Nations amateur radio station with the call sign 4U1VIC at Vienna International Center. The new C7A and 4Y1A call signs will be activated on special occasions related to the organizations or as a commemorative operation. For recognition purposes, the call sign block of C7A to C7Z has been allocated to the World Meteorological Organization, while 4YA to 4YZ is assigned to the International Civil Aviation Organization. However, both of these call sign blocks will only count as Austria for DXCC purposes. In DX, GM4YXI and GM3WOJ will be operational as A35X and A35V, respectively, from Tongatapu Island, Tonga, through April 18th. Activity will be on 160 to 10 meters using CW and single sideband, with some RTTY. QSL both A35V and A35X via N3SL. Bill Moore, NC1L, who is the ARRL Awards branch manager, says that the recently completed 3C0BYP operation from Anovon has been approved for DXCC credit. That de-expedition ran from February 26th through March 6th. VE3KTB has been active stroke VY0 from Ellesmere Island since March 25th. The length of his stay is unknown, but he is mainly operating on 20 meters, QSL via his home call sign. Lastly, JA1SVP and JR1GSE will be on the air from Palau as T88FA and T88TH, respectively, between May 16th to the 19th. Bands and modes were not announced. QSL each operator via their home call sign. And finally this week, the nominating season for the 2014 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award is now open. Created in 1986, this award is offered to recognize the achievements of a radio amateur aged 19 or younger for his or her accomplishments in service to the nation, his or her community, or to the advancement of the state of the art through amateur radio. Nominees must reside in any one of the United States' 50 states, its possessions, or in any of the 10 Canadian provinces. Complete details, rules, and the required nominating form in Microsoft Word format are available on our website at www.arnewsline.org/YHOTY. Nominating forms can also be obtained by sending a self-addressed stamped envelope to Amateur Radio Newsline, Incorporated, Young Ham of the Year Award, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Please note that the nominating forms and support documentation become the property of the Amateur Radio Newsline and cannot be returned. The cutoff date for nominations to be postmarked or electronically filed is midnight on May 30th, 2014. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Hal Rogers, K8CMD, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2014, all rights reserved.